Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology, and I have read all of Jane Austen, and I am joined by
Teresa, and I have a background in social work, and I have read none of Jane Austen except for what we've done so far on this podcast.
Woohoo! And today we are talking about chapter 56, 57, and 58 of Pride and Prejudice.
All right, are we ready to dive right in? These are some juicy chapters.
Yeah, how are you feeling after these? You hate me a little less?
Yeah, I do. I mean, we're getting to the love, so I love that. But we also only have three chapters left. That's not enough time for me to like know what their life is going to be like. So I hate that. But it's good. I do hate you a little less.
That's good. Yeah, I guess let's dive in. Thoughts on chapter 56?
Well, I wrote like initially like, ooh, a stranger's arriving at the house. How fancy. And then we find out who that stranger is. And I was like, ugh, no, go away. I do not like you. Yeah, Lady Catherine decides now's the time to show up and make her presence known at random. I love that the rest of the family's just like, oh, yeah, she's totally just like stopping by to visit because she met Lizzie once. Like, what are they thinking? No, she's not.
Well, I think everybody's stunned, right? Like Lizzie's stunned. Her mom is stunned, but I don't know if she's smart enough to be confused. But yeah, it's just weird.
I get it. It's like royalty or like celebrity shows up at your house. Like she's a fancy lady. This is not the average day visitor when you don't have a deep intimate connection. She's not family, she's not related. This is not the type of person who shows up at the Bennett house on a random Tuesday.
Well, I think it's really interesting as I was going through, she gets coded by Austin on multiple levels as rude. This entire interaction is rude. She arrives early before it's appropriate for visitors to arrive. She's ungracious. She talked about her sincerity and frankness as like, yeah, you're rude.
Yeah, even the fact that Lizzie like greets her and she just makes no knowledge of it.
She just nods her head. So yeah, Lady Catherine just shows up and it's, I suppose that is your mother.
I was thinking back to, the last time Lizzie saw Lady Catherine and how she was pretty condescending about Lizzie's parents and their parenting style. Yeah, how down on Mrs. Bennet she was in that conversation. And I did write here at one point, I was like, I don't know who's worse, Lady Catherine or Mrs. Bennet. Their energies are just a mixture in this.
Felt like Collins and Lady Catherine being in the same room. It's double cringe. But I think the feeling that you get from Mrs. Bennet in this interaction, not all of them, but in this interaction, was secondhand embarrassment. Like, Mom, just shut up. Oh my God. Whereas Lady Catherine is just a jerk.
Yes. She's a jerk and she's in a position where like no one's going to call her out on it. At least that's her expectation, that the world bends at their knee for her.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, Lizzie definitely takes her to task, which I love.
Oh, yeah. The level of entitlement that Lady Catherine has.
Oh, yeah. Totally entitled. Just like showing up, sitting down, and being like, well, this must be your family. Like, what is that?
Yeah. Having not saying anything else than just being like, yeah, I suppose this is your family.
So weird. I do really appreciate that when she arrived, Bingley was like, Jane, let's go into the forest. And I did write down, like, oh, I hope they're going to make out.
Well, he left before he knew who it was.
Oh, yeah, but for someone to be showing up that early in that nice of a carriage, I think he kind of knew this is not going to be a fun time for anyone. This is going to be really bad.
Yeah, I think also he's maybe gotten the flow of the family and he knows that there's going to be some secondhand embarrassment that happens at any interaction when a stranger comes, that he's like, come on, Jane, I like you. I don't like your family.
Like, Lizzie's fine, but no one else. This is going to be awkward and bad. I do wonder, it does make me wonder, where will Bingley and Jane actually make their primary residence? Will they be in London to be away from her family as frequently as possible?
Well, I mean, he is leasing Netherfield. So there's nothing says that they have to stay there long term.
And I wonder if they wouldn't.
I mean, would you?
Probably not. I mean, it might be nice to like visit every once in a while and have your own home so you don't have to stay at the Bennett house.
Yeah. It's like one of those situations where you like think about, and this is like very different time-wise, but like being close to your in-laws to have them help take care of the family and that sort of thing. Mrs. Bennett is not someone I would want doing any of that, like helping me run a household, helping me raise my kids. Like,
I also don't think she'd offer. I don't think she'd be the person you could depend on for that.
I don't know if you could depend on her, but she would offer because she wants her advice known everywhere. She would have her fingers in all of your business.
It'd be unsolicited advice for sure. And then Lady Catherine's like, all right, Lizzie, let's go for a walk. And she's like super condescending about their lawn.
Yeah, there's a prettyish piece of wilderness.
Yeah, I was like, well, that's rude. I did write down here several times, like, you're just so rude. Just hate you so much. I love this line in here of Elizabeth was determined to make no effort for conversation with a woman who was now more than usually insolent and disagreeable.
Oh, yeah.
I just wrote, go, Lizzie. Like, yeah, you do not have to bend to this lady. You do not have to. She's being rude. Like, you're not going to give her anything extra or anything nice at this point.
Well, and also someone rude just shows up to your house and demands to go for a walk with you.
Yeah. And someone you don't know that well, who then also starts the conversation with being like, you must know why I'm here. It's like, no, why are you here?
I have no fucking idea why you came to my house.
To like berate my family.
And then gets mad that you don't know. Read my mind. You can't? What is wrong with you?
This is why you are not quality for Darcy. And again, we see Lizzie masterfully take on a narcissist. I don't need to be afraid of you. I don't need to give you what you want. I'm going to stand up for myself. And I love it.
What power do you have over me? Like, fuck off.
And then, yeah, she goes into this whole thing about, I know Darcy might like you, but you cannot marry him. He is promised to my daughter.
Well, like, she comes and she's like, hey, somebody told me that Darcy proposed to you. I know that this is impossible. Well, then why the fuck did you show up here?
And Lizzie says that. She's like, why do you make the trip if this isn't real or this isn't a possibility?
You coming here is going to make people think that it is real.
Yep.
And that she's so demanding. Give me an answer. Give me an answer.
I want to know what's on your mind.
And Lizzie's, I do not pretend to possess equal frankness with your ladyship. You may ask questions which I shall not choose to answer. Just because you showed up here doesn't mean I have to answer anything.
Yeah, Lizzie owes her nothing.
Yeah, it's so weird, the sense of like extreme entitlement.
Mm-hmm. I hate this part too of she's like making all these suppositions about Darcy. Like she has any control in his life, but he forgets what he owes to himself and to all of his family. You're just talking about his obligations and not obligations he's actually agreed to or maybe even recognizes. This promise that you made with your sister many moons ago, who's now dead. What? And now it's like, it's your word against a dead person? Yeah, okay, maybe the two of you did, but maybe you didn't and you're just crazy.
But even if they had, there's no actual engagement. It's a wish. It's a hope that you're one of your cousins to get together,
which like, yeah, we can talk about the whole incest creepy part of that, but we'll hold that it's this time period where they like kept the bloodlines close, even though it's like real weird and creepy. I also hate in here that Lady Catherine, this line of, I am almost the nearest relation he has in the world and am entitled to know all his dearest concerns. And I wrote down, really? You're entitled to it? I don't think so. Like, no one's entitled to what's in someone else's mind. That's for him to choose whether or not he wants to share it with you. And he probably doesn't because you're kind of an ass. And I love Lizzie's response to this. But you're not entitled to mine.
Mm-hmm.
You have no bearing on my life. You get to know nothing about what I think or what I feel because who are you? I don't really care.
Yeah, Miss Bennet. Do you know who I am? Yeah, you're Lady Catherine de Bourgh. I've been to your house. Okay.
You're kind of an ass. That's what I know about you.
If you are mad at me, it doesn't change my life at all.
Even if she married Darcy, I don't know if it would matter in her life that much. They can avoid Lady Catherine. He's got enough money. He doesn't need Lady Catherine. He's got money. He's independent. He doesn't live that close to her. She could never see Lady Catherine again.
Well, and like Lady Catherine's like, we'll never talk to you again. Do you not understand that honor and decorum, his family will censure you and you will be slighted and despised. And Lizzie's just like, these are heavy misfortunes indeed. But the wife of Mr. Darcy must have such extraordinary sources of happiness necessarily attached to her situation that she could, upon the whole, have no cause to repine. I would be married to Darcy. You really think that I would care that you didn't talk to me? I would be married to Darcy, which is like, again, like that sweet moment where you're like, oh, Lizzie, you're so in love.
And I wrote down like, great, don't talk to me. This would be the greatest pleasure of my life. Actually, you just sweetened the deal that we may never talk again.
Right?
I can imagine that if Mrs. Bennet threw the same thing at Darcy, he'd also be like, great, the family I really want to avoid. I don't have to talk to them ever again. They've already said it. Lovely. Which we know Mrs. Bennet won't do. And there's going to be lots of awkward dinners in their future together.
Oh, yeah.
I just love this for Lizzie. Of Lady Catherine just gave her an out of never having to see her again.
Yeah, you told me that me marrying your nephew would be a disgrace. I'm not inviting you to Christmas.
Maybe not even the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine this is a fairly quoted line of the obstinate, headstrong girl.
Obstinate, headstrong girl! Like, people put that on t-shirts and mugs. So I know someone who really hates infantilization and like, don't call me a girl, I'm a woman. And gets like really upset when people quote this line. Of obstinate, headstrong girl. People are like, it's a line from a book, but they miss the point that what Lady Catherine is trying to do in this moment is infantilize. It's a put down. And that when people reclaim this and put it on mugs and stuff, they're not glorifying the fact that she's using this term. They're saying, yeah, fuck you. I'm an obstinate, headstrong girl. Fine. And they're reclaiming it. So anyway, I just always think of that whenever I see this line now. I'm like, yeah, she is purposely trying to infantilize her. That's why she's using girl. She is trying to put Lizzie down. And Lizzie's just kind of like, obstinate and headstrong. Thank you.
Yeah. Who, me? Lovely. I wrote in here that like she follows it up with, is this your gratitude for my attentions to you last spring? And all I wrote was, yes, because you were an ass. I don't know what you thought those attentions, and I'm using air quotes here, you were not nice the entire time Lizzie was at your house. Just because she's visited your house does not mean she owes you anything, especially when you were really mean to her.
And I feel like when she's getting this entitled and like, let's sit down. I'm not used to being told that I can't get what I want. Lizzie's response of, that will make your ladyship's situation at present more pitiable, but it will have no effect on me. I just like, I want to use that line on someone one day when they're like, I'm not used to not getting my way, to be like, That's way more pitiable for you, but it has no impact on me.
Right? Your anger does not impact me. Sorry, you're throwing a tantrum.
And then she goes on to further insult her family. You are a gentleman's daughter, but what was your mother? Fuck off. Yeah, we don't love Mrs. Bennet, but fuck you. It's really interesting because what she is repeating here is Darcy's initial thoughts in that first proposal. You can see where Darcy got these feelings of entitlement from. Darcy maybe didn't say them in such extremely rude ways, but there's that echo of kind of, oh yeah, we also have to remember that Darcy thought this only like, what, how many chapters ago? 20?
I mean, he's still kind of, I think he still thinks it.
Well, maybe he's realized that his relations, fucking Lady Catherine right now, are also not great.
Yeah, maybe he's realizing no family's perfect. And if he's looking to marry someone with a perfect family, it's not going to happen. I do love that Lizzie is like, he's a gentleman, I'm a gentleman's daughter, we're equals. And she's very clear of like, we're on the same footing. You cannot tell me otherwise.
If whatever my connections may be, if your nephew does not object to them, they can be nothing to you.
Yeah, like, who are you and why do you care? This has no bearing on your life, except for you think it does because you want him to marry your daughter. Also, there doesn't seem to be a particular affection between her daughter and Darcy.
No, they're just like, hey, cuz. Yeah, we just nod heads at each other every so often.
There's nothing there.
Yeah. And then she tries to get Lizzie to promise that she won't get engaged.
Why does she think this will work? Make me a promise that you're not going to marry him.
Very, like, it's entitlement to the core. And then she's shocked and astonished that she didn't get her way.
And I love that she's like, I'm not leaving until you tell me what I want. And Liz is like, well, I'm not going to tell you that, so...
I guess you'll be sitting here for a while. I'm going to go back inside. Then she keeps insulting her family.
Mm-hmm. She's like, all right, I'm leaving. Like, I'm not having this conversation with you.
Yeah, you've insulted me in every possible method.
Which is true. She did. She attacked her at every angle that she could think of.
But she is also bringing up concerns that, like, we've already talked about, that if they do get married, he is now intrinsically tied to Wickham.
He seems willing to take that on.
It is a big deal, I guess.
I'm not saying that these things aren't big deals, but it's very clear that they've both decided these are things we can manage together.
He doesn't think that the shades of Pemberley will be polluted.
That line, I just love that. The shades of Pemberley. It just feels so perfect that that's what she is like. Well, the shades then will be polluted. What is this final ditch effort?
Yeah, it's her sense of entitlement, her sense of the world. It's entirely this very visceral white class system perspective of like, yeah, you cannot pollute the upper classes with your lower class blood is the entire argument that she's been making this entire time.
And I love that she's like, you have to think about duty, honor, and gratitude. And this line of neither duty nor honor nor gratitude has any possible claim on me in the present instance. That line reads to me as Lizzie being a free woman, which just, my heart, I love it.
Fairness in that this would be a hard marriage for them, in that, yeah, they're probably, like, Darcy's going to be looked down on in certain circles for marrying Lizzie. But it is one of those things where it's like, yeah, but would you want to continue to be friends with those people? Bingley's not going to. He's marrying her sister. So, like, you're not losing your best friends.
And, like, the only one that would likely strain things with is with Charlotte. But even then...
Well, as Charlotte's already sort of hinted at, Charlotte is hoping that there's a parsonage near Pemberley that she and her spouse can go and stay at instead. Charlotte has been the best schemer.
Oh, yeah, she's been planning this. How can I improve my life, too, so I don't have to see this crazy lady all the time?
And then she leaves. I take no leave of you, Miss Bennet. I send no compliment to your mother. You deserve no such attention. I am most seriously displeased.
Fine. Just go. I wrote down, good. I'm glad you're displeased.
And I mean, Lizzie walks in back into the house and her mom's like, what happened? And she's like, I can't, nothing.
Which, like, is enough, actually, for Mrs. Bennet. Like, she doesn't need to know more than that. I did put down here, if Darcy's mom was actually alive, what would she actually think? And we don't know enough about her to know, like, would she be with Lady Catherine there being like, don't marry my son? Or would she be like, oh, he seems so happy, I'm so glad. We don't know enough, but I did find myself wondering.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things in this story is, and a couple of awesome stories, is that there's freedom to make choices for, and parents don't exist for at least one of the main characters. Because Darcy's obligations might have been different if his parents had been alive. Darcy's feelings and familial obligations might have felt different if he had to look after anyone but his sister. But he can look at this and be like, cool, Lizzie's going to be a great companion for my sister. This is a great choice.
Right. They like each other. And that's really what matters.
It's the only real consideration that he has to make in terms of family.
Which is kind of nice for him and for her that, like, they can both kind of make their decisions independently.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, Lizzie doesn't have to, because Jane is marrying Bingley, who is financially secure, she doesn't have to make a decision based on finances either. Does it help that Darcy's a billionaire? Yes. But she doesn't have to marry him because he's rich.
It's just really sweet. You get excited for the two of them.
Yeah, and then we go into 57. I will say the things that I wrote down for Lizzie's initial musings after Lady Catherine was that she's like getting pretty angry at Darcy to be like, fine, if she can convince him not to marry me, then fuck that dude. I don't need him in my life. I hope that's not the case because I love him. But if he can be convinced by her, then who the fuck is he anyway? Like, he's not the man that I thought he was. So I don't need this shit in my life.
We've seen this from Lizzie a couple times where she like talks herself into like, I don't need him. I want him, but I don't need him.
She's having arguments with him in her head.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I imagine that Lizzie has a lot of these conversations in her head, and it's not rumination necessarily, but I could see her getting to a point of ruminating on it and just having the fight in her head and then the fight never coming.
I mean, we do know that she ruminates. She's talked about staying awake for hours thinking about Darcy. So she definitely ruminates, and that's a little bit of how this reads, of her being like, how can I convince myself that I'll be okay if Darcy doesn't love me?
Which, I mean, if the scenario was that Lady Catherine convinced Darcy not to marry Lizzie, I think Lizzie still would be fine.
Yeah, she would realize that Darcy's not the person that she thought he was.
Exactly. I did write in here, he better show up. I want Darcy to be who we think he is, but she'd be fine without him. She doesn't need him.
No. Which is like a good place to be when you're falling in love.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
And then we move on to Collins.
Oh my god. As soon as we heard that there was a letter from Collins, all I wrote down was, go away! Especially the last letter he wrote. I also really hate that they've only known Collins for maybe, what, 6 months we're going here now? A year, maybe? Only when he started to look for a wife,
yeah,
has he entered into the picture. And now he's like sitting on high giving them advice about how to run their lives. Ugh, I just hate him.
Lizzie suspected that this was how Lady Catherine found out about a possible engagement with her and Darcy, is through Collins. And we get confirmation of that.
Which, again, I wonder about, like, how much does Collins look at what Charlotte's getting?
Oh, yeah. And there is like a little piece of me that was Charlotte like Lizzie and Darcy? Like, did she stir this pot?
Could she see it happening?
Well, did she push it? Did she push it so that it got brought up to Lady Catherine so that the rumor and the stir started?
But why? What would her goal be for that?
To get them together.
But that's a really risky plan on her part.
See, I think yes and I think no, because I think Charlotte knows Lizzie and knows that Lady Catherine will object and knows that if Darcy still proposes, if Lady Catherine objects, that's like gooey for Lizzie. because
yeah,
it's going to show a firmness of character in Darcy that Lizzie will be like, oh yeah, you put me first. Yeah, baby. So I just like to think that Charlotte's in the background moving the pieces around.
She's the puppet master in this scenario. I still think it's too risky. I don't see that happening, but you can imagine that. That can be one of your fanfics that you write. Charlotte, the puppet master. I also love that Mr. Bennet gets all surprised that it's Mr. Darcy. All I wrote was like, you missed the plot, dude. This is why you've been in the library reading your books. You've missed everything.
To be fair, everybody has at this point. Lizzie has not been telegraphing her feelings to anyone.
I also hate and hear Collins's whole speech about like, well, to be a good Christian, she should not marry this man.
No, that's not what that was about. He talks about like, don't get married.
Oh, it's about Lydia.
That's about Lydia and the fact that Lydia was allowed to come into their house. You ought certainly to forgive them as a Christian, but never to admit them in your sight or allow their names to be mentioned in your hearing.
What does he think forgiveness is?
Well, this is when Mr. Bennet is kind of like, that's his notion of Christian forgiveness. I think it's so interesting and fascinating, and we've talked about this before, that this type of Christian, basically one who is unforgiving, judgmental, who will shut people out, who will condemn people for things that they think are wrong, lifestyle choices that they think are wrong, being human beings in ways that they disagree with, the very essence of evangelical Christianism in certain contexts, is it still resonates today a lot. And you missed the point of Christianity.
Oh, 100%. And what frustrates me most is Colin's supposed to be the like spiritual leader for his neighborhood.
Yes, but that again feels very true.
Oh, 100%.
Where do people get these lessons? They get them from the leaders who get put into positions of power, who prescribe this sort of, you should, of course, forgive your children, but never speak to them again. Don't ever look at them again.
What is that? Don't even let their name be spoken in your presence.
Yeah, so that's great forgiveness.
Every time Collins comes into the picture, I think about the people out there who like Collins, and I'm just like, I don't know what you're doing, but you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. We are reading very different books.
Very, very different books.
Did you catch that Charlotte's pregnant?
No. Oh, his expectation of a young olive branch.
Yeah. The rest of his letter is only about his dear Charlotte's situation, his expectation of a young olive branch.
I had not picked up that meant baby on the way. Oh, I'm so sorry, Charlotte. Now you have to have kids with this guy.
But the great thing, probably, about Charlotte being pregnant is that she gets a 9-month reprieve.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm very certain that she could be like, no, don't touch me.
There's a baby inside already.
Yeah. And that Collins would be fine with that because that's what sex is for.
Right. Part of me is like, it'll be nice for Charlotte to have another being in the house that's not Collins.
Right. I feel like Charlotte probably, well, we don't know if Charlotte wanted a family, but I assume that was part of her purpose in getting married.
Yeah, it's true.
Any other thoughts on Mr. Collins or Mr. Bennet?
I mean, I like that Mr. Bennett's kind of like, you know what? We're going to laugh at our neighbors because they're all stupid anyways. Do what you want. It is a little nice that he's kind of like, let's not pay any mind to this annoying guy.
Yeah, he's very good at like not picking it up and just being like, this is hilarious. I think it's really interesting the discussion he has in here. It's like, I would not give up my correspondence with Mr. Collins and cannot help but give him preference over Wickham. It's like he has a running tally in his head of who's the biggest idiot in my life.
Oh, totally. I wonder if that tally is like, as long as it's not me, we're doing fine. Which part of me wonders if when Lydia was off with Wickham gallivanting around, if part of his worry was like, oh, now people are going to think I'm the idiot.
Like it was self-preservation more than it was actually about Lydia.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Lizzie ends this feeling like, fuck.
Yep.
And then instead of sending a letter, Darcy comes back.
Yay! Darcy, we're so excited to see you. We just love it. I love how strategic Bingley was of like, let's all go for a walk so he could be alone with Jane, but I'm sure he's like, let's also get Darcy and Lizzie alone together.
Do you think Bingley knows?
I think at this point he probably does.
Okay.
I think that there's no reason for Darcy to keep showing up at this point.
Mm.
So there's got to be something here. And I don't think Bingley's entirely naive.
So he knows that Darcy has feelings for Elizabeth. Do you think he knows that Lizzie has feelings for Darcy?
Probably not, but I think that's more because Lizzie and him don't know each other well enough.
Mm.
And so he probably can't get a read on it, is my guess. But I could see him being like, all right, I'm going to help my buddy out. Like, give him a leg up, get him together.
He's being a wingman.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they go for a walk. They get to ditch Kitty at the Lucases.
I know, poor Kitty.
I mean, she got to go call on her friend.
Oh, yeah, no, I think it's fine. But also the line of Kitty was too much afraid of him to talk. Oh, you got a long road ahead of you, Kitty. Especially since their lives are going to be intertwined more significantly.
Yes, because they go on and confess their feelings.
I know, it's so cute.
I don't know, what was your favorite parts of all this?
I mean, there are a couple lines that I highlighted. This one of that the wish of giving happiness to you might add force to the other inducements which led me on, I shall not attempt to deny. And I'm like, oh, he just wants her to be happy. I just want someone to make me happy. Like, it's so sappy and so cute. And that he's like, your family doesn't owe me anything, which I wonder if he's speaking also about dowry in that of like, I'll marry you without a dowry because she ain't got one. And that he thought only of her. I thought only of you. Oh, Darcy. That's so sweet.
You are too generous to trifle with me. If your feelings are still what they were last April, tell me at once. My affections and wishes are unchanged, but one word from you will silence me on the subject forever.
And it's just like an He's like, I love you and I always will love you, but if you never want me to talk about this again, just tell me and I'll shut up. Yeah. And he's like, all right, my last attempt at this. And Lizzie loves him back.
Mm-hmm.
There is a line in here, the happiness which this reply produced was such as he had probably never felt before. And he expressed himself on the occasion as sensibly and as warmly as a man violently in love can be supposed to do. I feel like that's another line that ends up on t-shirts of like a man violently in love.
Not so much.
Okay. Well, it stood out to me of just that language of like how deep and passionate his love for Lizzie is.
I think Jane Austen, she very much loves this imagery of men who are violently in love getting tongue-tied.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's her perception of like, if you are in love with me, you better be so tongue-tied and able but unable to express your feelings. If you were giving me poetry, then are you really in love? If you were composing a sonnet, then this is probably not real love, which kind of goes back to like those initial discussions at the start around Jane getting poetry from a guy, that wasn't real deep love because it was fanciful. It was
performative love.
Right. Whereas real love, sure, Darcy might be able to write, well, I don't know if Darcy can, but like write a poem or something, maybe on their first anniversary. But if he is in this moment of confession, able to express himself clearly in Jane Austen's mind, that's not real love. Like, you better be so fucking tongue-tied that you can't get out the overwhelming feeling that happens with love.
Well, and I know we've talked about the fact that Jane Austen, she was engaged for, I think, a day, right? And then was like, no, I can't marry this guy. And I wonder if it was that type of thing going through her mind of, oh, he's actually not that in love with me because it doesn't match what my understanding of true love is.
Or even for herself. Yes, there's the fact that Darcy has to express himself, but Lizzie's super awkward too and anxious. And she had to force herself to speak, and she wasn't very fluent. And like, Lizzie's tongue-tied too. And I wonder if there was also that sense for herself, kind of like, I'm not tongue-tied. This isn't love.
Yeah, I don't have those feelings that I'm supposed to have. I wonder if Jane Austen ever had that experience of finding true love, but like, circumstances kept it from working out. Because she writes so eloquently about it and like so vividly about what she pictures that to be. And it makes me wonder, like, has she actually experienced that?
And maybe, we don't know. There's a meme that goes around about Jane Austen was never in love, and yet she writes about love. And someone wrote, oh, all of these people writing murder mysteries, and they've never committed one murder.
True. Yeah.
You don't have to have experienced it to be able to know what it is.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I hadn't considered it that way. I like that meme. I'm going to think about that often.
Mm-hmm. And then we find a little bit about that Lady Catherine did go and see him.
Which, I mean, we're not surprised. We knew she was going to. And yes, there was some, is this guesswork? But Lady Catherine's character is so obnoxious and horrible that Lady Catherine just sucks so much that she would show up and do that because she feels entitled to do so.
Oh, yeah. And she left pretty much indicating that she was going to do that.
I take her as a lady of her word.
Mm-hmm. She's frank, but doesn't have the effect that she thought it would.
No, it had the exact opposite effect.
It taught me to hope.
I know. I was like, oh, Darcy.
Up till this point, he was like really unsure if Lizzie's feelings had been changing. He was like, maybe in like a couple of years. After we just keep seeing each other because Jane and Bingley are together, maybe I can convince her. Like, he's playing a long game.
And he does recognize here of, if you really hated me, you would have just told Lady Catherine that, and this would be a non-issue. If I was the worst thing in the world, you'd just say that.
Yes, you know enough of my frankness to believe me capable of that. And I think it's really interesting. Like, we've been talking about Lady Catherine being frank, and Lady Catherine mentioned it like 3 or 4 times, that there's like this little callback of Lizzie being like, yeah, I was rude. I was rude when I talked to you.
I was rude and I don't regret it. Right? They had to go through all of that for them to be able to open up and fall in love and all of those things.
Well, and as Darcy says, what did you say of me that I did not deserve?
Yeah, he knows it.
And which is like why we love Darcy. Is because he is acknowledging his own flaws.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
And that he worked on himself.
He can change. He can change and grow. He took in some feedback and was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And we see a little bit of Lizzie, like, acknowledging her parts and things, too. Of kind of like, I'm not blameless. You don't need to, like, take on all of this blame for me to be in love with you. It's okay.
And I love that she's like, please don't say what I said then. It was really horrible. I'm so sorry. I wrote down here that, like, I just imagine her taking his, like, hands or and, like, holding them or, like, cradling his face and being like, it's okay.
Your reproof, so well applied, I shall never forget. Had you behaved in a more gentlemanlike manner.
Yep. Which is true.
Oh, yeah. It was such a good clapback. And it stuck with us and it stuck with him.
And he brings up his letter and he's like, did that help? Did that actually do what I thought it did? And it did for us as readers.
Oh, yeah.
And we know it did for Lizzie, too. It's just nice to know that he took into account what she said. And it's like, all right, I got to express myself differently.
I think this is also very much where we see that Darcy is going to treat Lizzie as an equal. He cares about her opinion. He cares about her feedback. He's not going to not speak his own mind, but he cares about her opinion. It's like, did my letter have an impact on you? He actually wants to know. And Lizzie has been coming to this realization, and this is sort of the firming of that, that this is the type of love that she wants.
It's a nice call to Lizzie acknowledging in that conversation with Lady Catherine that they're equals, and that that is what the relationship would be, is as equals. And in that time period is quite difficult to find. There aren't many relationships, and not all, but there aren't many relationships that are based on being equals, right? You think about like Charlotte and Collins, Mr. and Mrs. Bennet. There's very much a hierarchy in those relationships. And those are not our like relationships that we're putting on a pedestal. The ones that feel more like equals, like the Gardeners, we really like them. And we're like, oh, that's a good model.
Yeah. Darcy's like, burn that letter.
Don't ever read that or let anyone read that. That was horrible.
And Lizzie's like, I will if you think so, but it's a really nice letter.
It's what made me fall in love with you. Are you sure you want me to get rid of it?
She says, I know that my opinions have changed, and like, we know that my opinions aren't unalterable, but do you think that I would fall out of love with you just because I reread something that you wrote?
Well, and it had such a profound impact on her in a positive way. Like, why would it make it opposite?
Yep. And then Darcy talks about his upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And acknowledges his flaws.
And that growing up as a kid, he essentially was taught to be a Lady Catherine.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he grew up with. He was entitled to that.
From 8 to 28.
I do like this line of, you shewed me how insufficient were all my pretensions to please a woman worthy of being pleased.
Yes.
And I wish most men would read that and think about that. I was talking with a friend today about like how in some relationships, and not all relationships, like the bar is set really low for men and partners in general. Yeah, just how insufficient it is to end up pleasing someone who's actually worthy of that pleasing.
Right? Like, I like that he basically says, by you, I was properly humbled.
Yeah, well, because he even admits, like, I thought this is what you wanted. I thought I knew exactly what was going on in that situation. And it was not what was going on in that situation.
Yeah. I expected you to say yes. You're like, okay. I was just like, you must have hated me. Hate you? I was angry at first, but my anger soon began to take a proper direction. It's unfathomable to him that he would ever hate her. I think it's interesting. So like Lizzie brings up the how you must have hated me after that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it speaks to what we've been like seeing Lizzie do in her head of basically trying to figure out what would make Darcy fall out of love with me.
Mm-hmm.
What is the thing that can happen that I can do that will make Darcy fall out of love with me? Because she doesn't trust it yet. She doesn't understand the full depth of his affection, even though he's done all of these steps to show her. She's got that anxious attachment of this fear that the love is going to get taken away. And that's why that line of him being like, hate you, where he's just so surprised that she would think that, feels so sweet to me, because it's in that little two-line sentence of shock, he's conveyed how deeply he feels for her, that there's nothing she can do that will make him fall out of love.
Which is a great foundation to have at the start of a relationship that presumably will have a lot of challenges, if not by the world, by their families at least.
Well, even just their personalities and the fact that they're going to clash.
They're
going to
spar all the time.
Mm-hmm. And not always going to be sexy sparring. That he provides this foundation of, we can be angry with each other. I can be angry with you. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to fall out of love with you. And also the fact that he was angry with her, and then his anger turned towards the anger of the problem. He was very quickly able to externalize the anger. He wasn't angry with her. He was angry at the problem in their circumstances. And like, that's such a healthy foundation for a relationship.
It is a really good place for them to be starting out from. Because I think if they hadn't gone through all of this and Lizzie had said yes on that initial proposal, they would have been fighting and it would not be good. they would fall out of love with each other, because at that point their love would have been unstable.
I don't know if he would have fallen out of love, but he would have had to do a lot of work to prove his love,
mm-hmm.
that I don't think he would have understood why.
Yes.
Right? There would have been a fight that happened at one point, and Lizzie would have been like, "You don't love me anymore." And Darcy would be like, "Why are you going there? Like, I don't understand where this came from." Because in his head, this is just like an intrinsic, of course she loves me, if she had said yes at that first proposal.
And I just feel like, thank goodness she didn't say yes at that point, because we got all of this out of it. I love that he goes on to talk about his sister and talk about leaving the inn to help out with Lydia and how he already had a plan.
Yeah, before he left the inn.
That he was just like, all right, this is what's going to happen. This is how I'm going to do this. This is exactly what needs to happen. And then they even talk about Bingley and Jane. And I love this line of, Darcy was delighted with their engagement. Because even that's a big change for him. He had not been happy about that idea before. And now he's like, oh, this is great. This is really great. My best friend and your sister? How perfect.
Yeah. Oh, my best friend's happy? I'm so happy.
And I love that they like spent some time walking together and lost track of time. We're like, oh, we should be at home now. Whoops.
I like that Lizzie basically figures out that Darcy gave permission for Bingley to propose.
Yep.
And that she is like prepared to tease him.
But she's like, oh, we're not ready for that just yet.
I know where the boundaries are.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't established that it's okay for me to tell him, oh, you like Bingley because you could boss him around.
I want Bingley to still have a bit more of a backbone, but I do like this dynamic in their relationship of her being like, one day I'm going to tease you about this. Not today, but one day.
Yes, Bingley is like a puppy and Darcy is very clearly the alpha. I think that this is like such a sweet softening of that relationship, and that you see that Darcy actually cares about Bingley's best interest.
Yeah, and what he had done was not out of malice. He thought he was protecting his friend.
Right. He was still wrong, but he thought he was doing the right thing. And that Bingley forgives him, and that things are all nice, and that they wandered and wandered.
It just all seems so sweet. And I imagine that Darcy's going off to be like, all right, Mr. Bennet, can I marry your daughter? She's already said yes, but can I marry her?
Right.
This really sweet place to end of, we've only got 3 chapters left, but I don't feel like we're left on a cliffhanger at this point.
You know that it's going to be a happy ending.
Yeah, you know it's going to be a happy ending, and there's going to be love. We love love.
Cerise's motto.
Yeah, we always love love. Always.
Always. Yeah, what do you think we've got going in the last 3 chapters?
I hope that, like, they get married and maybe they don't invite Lady Catherine and Collins. Although I think Collins will get invited so that Charlotte can be there. But maybe not Lady Catherine. And yeah, I just imagine we'll, like, see them telling everyone that they got engaged and then getting married. And that it'll be a very contrasting wedding to Lydia's, which was as quick as possible. Don't say anything too much about it. Versus, like, this is going to be a big announcement and a big party. Maybe we'll get dancing. We'll get a ball. That's my prediction. There's gonna be dancing.
You love a good dance, huh?
I do love a good dance. It's my favorite part of Regency books.
Is the dancing.
Yeah, I think because I want to be a Regency ball dancer, I think that could be a lot of fun.
Oh, there are lessons that we can take.
Okay, maybe we'll do that.
I don't remember which con it was, but there was a con that offered like online Regency dance lessons. So there are online classes that we could take if you would like to learn. And then there is a ball in our area that we could always attend if you'd like. You can get dressed up and go and dance with other people who also get dressed up. And it's super nerdy.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So not only have I converted you to a Jane Austen fan, I'm going to get you to cosplay.
No, probably not. But we can pretend.
Favorite quote?
My favorite line, which I've already read out, but I'll read it again, is the, neither duty nor honor nor gratitude have any possible claim on me in the present instance. Because I love that Lizzie's making a choice for herself, and that was not an opportunity afforded to many women in this era. It feels really powerful to me. And it still feels powerful today because not everyone gets to make those choices in that way. How about you? What's your favorite quote?
I mean, there's so many in here that are like really good like lines, but it taught me to hope, said he, as I had scarcely ever allowed myself to hope before. Ah, Darcy.
How lovely that her love brings hope to his life.
The other line that kind of sticks out is she remembered that he had yet to learn to be laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because, yes, Lizzie has witnessed this antagonistic relationship between her parents. And her dad has said only a chapter before, for what do we live but to make sport of our neighbors and to laugh at them in our turn? Her dad is someone who likes to make fun of people, who likes to tease. And she's seen that in an antagonistic way with her parents. But we can tell in that moment where she knows that the boundaries haven't been established with Darcy, that she's not going to engage in that sort of behavior antagonistically. She's going to do it playfully.
Yeah, that she's doing it playfully and to tease him, but not to hurt him.
Yeah. And it's such a moment of, oh, you're like a loving brat. Like, you understand about consent and boundaries. Pride and Prejudice. So many lessons about consent over and over and over again. The line from Darcy of, you are too generous to trifle me. If your feelings are still what they were last April, tell me at once. My affections and wishes are unchanged, but one word from you will silence me on the subject forever. He's like doing the actual consent thing where he's bringing it up while also being like, hey, I don't mean to be pushing this, and this is not coercive in any way, shape, or form. I want you to know that you have autonomy to say no. I'm just letting you know that if you're still interested in this, you can still say yes. It's that great thing of when we talk about consent, that just because someone said no once doesn't mean they're going to say no again. And that unless someone has said, don't ask me again, that doesn't mean that you can't ask again, just as long as someone has the free autonomy in every instance to say no, and that no gets respected. That's how you ask again without it being coercive. Pride and Prejudice is such a good masterclass in proper consent and improper consent. Like freaking Collins, the way that Lizzie and Darcy navigate a healthy relationship makes me so happy.
Well, and again, it comes back to both of them treating each other like equals.
Yeah.
That when you take power and control out of the scenario, you can actually operate from a place of seeking consent that's not coercive and treat someone as your equal.
Yeah. That type of relationship is what creates secure attachments.
Oh, yeah. They might bicker and fight, but their foundation is secure.
Yeah. Because they have functioned in this way where they both are two autonomous beings, where there isn't this power dynamic of he has more power than I have, or she has more control than I have. They both are powerful, autonomous beings.
Makes me happy. Like, these chapters were just joyful chapters, it feels like. Even Lady Catherine coming and being an ass, there still feels like there's a joy in like the way Lizzie is able to approach that situation and stand her ground. And
mm-hmm. Yes, so much joy.
So our next episode will be our last of this series, at least of the book. We will be watching some of the movies and talking about that. And so Pride and Prejudice is still going to stay with us, but we're going to read the last three chapters.
Yes. And then we'll probably take a little bit of a break because somebody's going to be mostly unavailable for most of September before starting and diving into our next book,
which we said we would announce on this show. So, Kate, do you want to give an announcement? Because I know this is your favorite book.
So this is my comfort read. It is one that I think many Jane Austen fans, they start with Pride and Prejudice and they maybe never get to this one. So we're going to be reading Northanger Abbey. I'm very excited for it because it is such a soft, soft romance while also being ridiculous because it's a parody of Gothic romance.
So I'm excited because I know nothing about this book. Because I knew a little bit about Pride and Prejudice. I feel like it's culturally quite out there, but I know absolutely nothing about Northanger Abbey. Absolutely nothing. And so we're going to go on an adventure with that and find out.
It's going to be fun. So that's the book that we're probably going to start. That will probably start in October sometime. Thank you for coming along on this ride. We've got 3 more chapters, and then we're going to get Teresa's thoughts on how Pride and Prejudice has changed their views on Regency reading.
Yes, I think it'll be good. I think I already know that there will not be enough dancing in this book as a whole. So that is probably going to be my biggest critique.
Well, thanks for listening, and we will hear from you next time. If you would like to follow us online, we are on Instagram at Austin Therapy Podcast. And if you would like to follow my meme account, it is at Austin Therapy.
We'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye.